We have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
And we want to give a big, big thank you to everybody that contributed last week to, on behalf of Mind Over Matters, to the KXP Fall Membership Drive. We really appreciate your showing of support for the work we're doing here, and a lot of specific mentions on people that did contribute said how much they both love Jav and Maria and the work you've been doing.
Yeah. A couple people that Maria's filed restraining orders against. But,
No.
No, those haven't been, filed yet.
No, that's not necessary. Actually, I don't have any fans who are obnoxious, so I have to say.
Lucky you!
I have to say I'm flattered by that people who enjoy the show and enjoy the work that we do are generally pretty nice people. So, and I want to say thank you, too, to them for donating.
Absolutely. Of course, we appreciate people who donated to the station also, not just to Mind Over Matters, but we like the folks who donated on our behalf.
And the folks
that much more.
And the folks who send their continuing support to Eat the State as well.
Yes,
absolutely. We do our fund drives.
And people that don't even send support, we
and everybody
we
who just gets
just
up in the morning,
just
gets
listening,
foot out of the bed, yeah.
People are just listening, or just rolling over,
the people,
turning the radio on.
The people who listen and then turn around to their friends and say, "Hey, you know what I heard?"
You're not going to believe this.
Yeah, and they discuss what we talk about. That's those folks we like to.
Yeah,
we just like a lot of people.
We do. All right, let's dive into this week's news, starting with the city council and tunnel-related news.
Oh, yeah. No, the city council is being pressured by the mayor's office to hold a vote on committing to construction of the downtown traffic tunnel.
And they wonder tomorrow, is that, or Monday, rather, is that correct?
Well, I think they'll probably vote somewhere around October 19th, which is probably close to the end of next week or early the week after.
No, the 19th is a week from Monday.
Yeah, it's a week from Monday. So Mayor Nichols has been pushing them to hold this vote. Apparently, he forgot to get the okay from the city council before he went to the governor with a plan to pay for portions of the tunnel and other things that have to go along with the tunnel.
I'm sure it was just an oversight.
Yeah. And it's interesting. He's pushing for this vote before the city council can finalize the budget. They're reviewing the mayor's budget proposals right now, which include a lot of the funding proposals that Nichols agreed to with the governor, including $140 million for the First Avenue streetcar, $50 million for the Mercer Beautification Project, and an additional $100 million to improve the west side of Mercer from about Queen Anne Avenue north down towards the waterfront, and a good about $250 million to relocate utilities work for the downtown traffic tunnel. So he wants to get all this stuff nailed down before he leaves office. And also, you can view this as his attempt and an attempt by the Democratic Party establishment in the city to lay ground for Malahan's election as the next mayor.
Because, and to tie the hands of McGinn if he gets elected.
Yeah, because if the city council votes on this and approves it, then it'll be that much harder for McGinn to reverse it once he gets in, if he gets into office. So in a sense, it'll give Malahan a chance to wave this around and say, look, the city council's already approved the tunnel. You know, if McGinn gets elected, he's not going to be able to do anything. His hands are tied, et cetera.
All right. All right. Moving on. The decision coming out this week that affects the OPA.
Yeah, the Public Employee Relations Commission, which is the body of the city that makes decisions relating to union contracts and personnel policies in general with city employees, had been reviewing the legislation that was passed by Nick Licata and the city council last year that strengthened the Office of Professional Accountability, the citizen review panel that is supposed to provide independent oversight to the Seattle Police Department. And that agency's hands essentially have been tied ever since its formation early this decade, because of a couple things, because of the lack of independent subpoena power, and because the SPD has been incredibly reluctant to share any kind of meaningful information with the OPA. The legislation that was passed by the city council was fought tooth and nail by the Police Officers Guild, that basically said that, you know, allowing the OPA to have information on pertaining to its evaluation of investigations on things like, oh, you know, the identity of officers involved, their work history, whether there have been any previous complaints against them for the similar behavior, etc. That was all a change in working conditions and had to be negotiated with the union. And what the PERC came back with this week was a ruling that said, no, actually, this is within the city's rights to do this as
management.
As management. And therefore, the OPA can go ahead, and it still doesn't have the independent subpoena power that would be necessary for it to do its own investigation, and therefore to, you know, really to be able to give real oversight to investigations that the SPD has done. All it can do really right now is review the SPD's own investigations, but at least it can do that now. That's something that it's been unable to do really since its creation.
Yeah, I think. The OPA, isn't that the city's internal or the police department's internal review person, and what you're talking about is the civilian review board that answers to the city council?
No, the civilian review board is part of the OPA.
Okay, because I thought it was a separate body.
No, they're not.
Okay, because I thought the OPA
and
is
the OPA is. The head of it, the staff person for it, is appointed by the chief, but it's actually an independent agency.
Okay. Because I thought what the OPA did is they make recommendations, they review files and make recommendations to the chief, and then he decides on disciplinary action. And then the board, what it's supposed to do is take a look at the whole disciplinary process and make recommendations to the city council.
That's accurate.
Yeah, and then in my understanding, the OPA got to look at all the files and the complete information, but the review board itself didn't get a chance to look at all the complete information. They got redacted files with names deleted, and essentially,
I don't think the OPA has been able to see those files either.
Really? Because it really makes it difficult to tell what actually went on when all you get is a jumbled mess of words with no names attached. You can't tell what's happening in most of these cases and who they refer to.
It completely undermines the ability of the agency to actually do independent review, which of course is what the city council's intention was all along.
And then what this committee did was they basically said, okay, you should be able to get the complete information to see what's actually going on, and so now they can actually the files are no longer redacted. They actually get complete information now.
All right, let's move on. Give us an update this week on Nicholsville.
Well, it is somewhat befitting given that it's getting close to the end of Nichols. It may be also getting close to the end of Nicholsville, although certainly not the people who have been part of Nicholsville. The encampment at Port Terminal 107 was swept at the end of the month, or at the beginning of the month, rather, by the Port Police. And for the time being, anyway, Nicholsville has been scattered. They're promising to regroup. And it should be noted that at least one of the mayoral candidates, Mike McGinn, has talked about and has told Nicholsville that he'd be willing to help them try and find a more permanent home. You know, whether that's simply a campaign promise or something that's followed up on, you know, obviously nobody knows, but, it's along with the tunnel legislation before city council. It's another one of these loose ends that Greg Nichols seems to be interested in trying to tie up, is making sure that the community of homeless people that bears his name is doing his best, and his buddies at the Port of Seattle did their best to try and make sure that they didn't outlive his tenure. The problem, of course, is that the homeless people still don't have homes and still need someplace to go, and the city services that that are there to accommodate them are still woefully inadequate in terms of shelter beds and whatnot. So the need is still absolutely there.
Yeah, and this is a record time for homelessness, even in our city where housing prices have remained fairly good. A lot of people are going through foreclosures and are being kicked out on the street. And a lot of those people don't have jobs. They've been recently laid off. In fact, the economic statistics are showing that many of the people who are entering foreclosure now are people who had fixed rate mortgages that and they had good credit. The problem is that they lost their jobs and couldn't keep up with the payments on their homes. Those folks are getting kicked out on the streets. So the homeless is not the face of the homeless is not what it used to be. A lot of it is people who look used to be very middle class, very upper middle class, some of them. And it's pretty cold-hearted and hard-hearted to be kicking those people around and saying, we don't want you in our city, we don't want you staying anywhere. Go to a shelter when the shelters are full.
Yeah.
Yeah. And winter is on the way.
And winter is on the way. And we've also got coming up, Councilmember Tim Burgess is putting together a proposal that will probably go before council in the coming weeks that is, basically an anti-panhandling ordinance, very similar in tone and intent to some of the controversial measures during the era of Mark Sidran that would, and I don't see how this could possibly be constitutional, but ban panhandling in a number of locations in terms of, you know, freeway on ramps near ATMs and so forth. Ban quote unquote aggressive panhandling, which is already supposedly illegal, although it's never enforced because there's never any complaints about it. It's basically Tim Burgess's effort to become mayor next time around.
Yeah.
By appealing to popular sentiment, because it's always fun to kick around the homeless and they don't vote generally.
All right, moving on to national news and this week's economic news.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about the jobless recovery, especially this week when we got further unemployment statistics showing that unemployment is just not easing at all. And that it could go on for another long time. A lot of people are saying, you know, what is a jobless recovery? We've talked about this a little bit on the show, and I've written about it on the blog, and I think also in Eat the State too. But really, what the jobless recovery actually is, apparently, is another bubble. And this time, it's a bubble in the bond market. You might say, okay, Maria, what are you talking about? What I'm talking about is how do businesses, when they're laying off people, still seem to look like they're going through a recovery or that their business is still growing? Now, they can do that in a couple of ways. One of the ways that they do that is by employing accounting tricks that I've talked about on the show before, by making their balance sheets look better. After all, a lot of the stuff that has led to the economic collapse, ways that businesses have made their balance sheets look better when they actually haven't been, a lot of those accounting tricks that they've been using in the past, like off-balance sheet entities to hide their debt, those things are still legal. And there's no regulatory agency out there that is issuing rules or going after companies for doing those things. So that's still going on. And
even though the people have been talking about reform for the last year, none of it's actually happened.
Yeah, none of it's actually happened. Yeah.
And some of those things are reforms that have been talked about since the days of Enron, and they still haven't happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of those accounting tricks are left over from the accounting tricks used by WorldCom and Enron when they had their famous collapse. So that's still going on. But one of the things that's also been helping businesses make their balance sheet look better is the cheap money from the Fed. In other words, the pretty much 0% interest rates. That's allowing companies to borrow money on the bond market at extremely low rates. So in other words, corporate debt or corporate bonds, a company can issue a bond, sell it to investors, and because investors are clamoring for some kind of investment that at least maintains its principal value and may have even the tiniest bit of return, investors are getting hungry for what they see as relatively safe investments like that, and so they're clamoring to buy up corporate debt. There's been a recent run-up in bond prices as investors are diving back into that market. So what we're seeing is some $265 billion flowing into the bond market, into bond funds, since the beginning of the year. That's 15 times more money than has gone into equity funds or stock funds. Even junk bonds are up 50% since January, junk bonds being the lowest rated corporate debt. So what that means is higher prices for bonds, and higher prices mean that corporations can issue their bonds with extremely low interest rates on them, so they don't have to pay very much on their debt. So but that means that they're still paying some interest. They're borrowing, they're still paying some interest, maybe like 5% for most companies, but they're still piling on the debt when they probably should be doing what American consumers are doing, which is saving money and paying down their debts. They're doing the reverse. This is something that corporations did in 2003 and 2004, and a lot of those corporations who did that in 2003 and 2004, when interest rates were at 1% and they could issue bonds with extremely low interest rates, in other words, get cheap money that way, a lot of those companies are the ones that are on the rocks right now, that are going bankrupt. What are companies doing with this money that they're getting? Well, they're doing lots of things. They're buying back stock to boost their share prices, which is another reason why the stock market is going up. They're also paying bonuses for company executives, for their highest paid employees, and they're issuing special dividends for shareholders. So in other words, they're saying, let's cash out now. You know, I know our shareholders are not making a lot of money on the stock market like they used to. Let's help them along. You know, let's give them a little bonus. So in other words, the highest paid employees and the wealthy shareholders are making out like bandits, while lower level employees are getting laid off and kicked out on the street. And another thing that companies are doing with that cheap money is they're doing mergers and acquisitions. So when you read the business press and you see all this merger talk, a lot of that's being funded by this bubble in the bond market. So, you know, those companies that ran up huge amounts of debt in 2003 and 2004 when interest rates were at 1%, those companies are getting bought up by companies that are running up huge amounts of debt now that interest rates are near or at zero. So I think it's extremely ironic, and it's just history repeating itself.
Sounds like a really solid program to me.
It's like these guys never learn, but you know.
Well, they do learn, but what they learn is that a particular type of behavior is consistently being rewarded, and that is short-term profits at the expense of long-term planning and the long-term stability, not only of the companies, but of the economy as a whole.
Exactly.
All right. Moving on to environmental-related news.
Yeah, a couple of really quick things. The EPA said last week, and this flew under the radar for most people, including me, they said last week that they will put a hold on 79 permit applications for mountaintop mining in central Appalachia. This is a new one for the EPA, exerting some kind of regulatory authority over mountaintop mining for the first time ever. For folks who are not familiar with it, mountaintop mining is where a company goes in, deforests a mountain, so cuts down all the trees, and then they take huge amounts of dynamite and blast off the top of the mountain, the entire top of the mountain, to expose seams of coal so that they can just dig them up out of the ground then. But what do they do with all that extra rock? They just blast it off the top of the mountain. They dump it in the nearest valley, usually obliterating local streams. So the EPA is saying that's a water quality issue for the first time ever. And they're saying that since 5% of U.S. coal, only 5% of U.S. coal comes from mountaintop mining, why the heck are we doing it? Hooray that the EPA is finally doing this.
The EPA is actually, like, you know, protecting the environment. What a concept.
I know. What a concept.
All right.
News to me.
Oh, and you had an Amazon.
Oh, yes, yes. The Greenpeace also reached an agreement with four huge meat producers not to accept cattle from areas of the rainforest in Brazil that have been recently deforested. These companies agreed to monitor their suppliers and registered farms to make sure that they're not cutting trees to make new grazing land and that they're not engaging in slave labor practices. This is great news, I think, and it's part of what can be done when you really push for changes related to global warming. Much of the global warming in the world is caused by deforestation, and much of that deforestation going on, and particularly in the Amazon, the world's largest forested area, much of that is due to cattle ranching. So this is good news.
All right. Moving on to, I think what was a shocker for just about everybody, the Obama Peace Prize.
Well, there's two basic interpretations. One is that hackers from The Onion managed to make their way onto every news website in the country this morning. Yeah. And the other possibility is that Barack Obama did, in fact, win the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize. And I'm leaning toward the latter interpretation, although I'm not entirely convinced. This award basically is an award to the American people. It's a thank you from, essentially the old guard of Europe for not electing Sarah Palin and John McCain, and not continuing the policies of George Bush. And it really underscores the extent to which, the United States in the Bush era, profoundly alienated the rest of the world. That there's been a lot of talk in the last 24 hours about, well, what has Obama done to merit such an award so soon into his presidency? And in fact, when the nominations closed for the award, it was only a couple weeks after he had actually been inaugurated. Well, it misses the point in a couple ways. Number one, just the fact that he was elected in the first place was probably enough to earn the undying gratitude of most of the world. But above and beyond that, the other, certainly it's more than a little frustrating, given that Obama is still overseeing two wars, torture, rendition, Guantanamo Bay, civil liberties violations, pilotless drones in Pakistan, et cetera, and there's no peace in Palestine yet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That being said, historically, the Peace Prize has also been used not only to reward past behavior, but also to encourage future behavior. In fact, one of the guidelines for the prize is that whether the recipient will be able to use the prestige of receiving the award in order to make his or her work in the future for the causes of peace and human rights that much more effective. And so in this event, on the one hand, I kind of wonder where my Peace Prize is, because, I've given some pretty good speeches, and apparently that's all you need to do. But above and beyond that, in the way also, this is also a challenge, just as it's a reward for the American people for electing Obama, it's also a challenge to the American people, because, Obama is being encouraged to pursue policies that will result in nuclear disarmament, that will result in the end of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, that will result in a negotiated settlement in Israel-Palestine, et cetera, et cetera. But none of those things are going to happen, and certainly the large and inexorable glacier that is Imperial America's foreign policy is not going to be turned around without substantial pressure from the American public. And as was mentioned in Counterspin last half hour, that when you have such an enormous disconnect between a majority of the American public wanting troops out of Afghanistan, not a choice between one or another policy of escalation there, then it's really up to us as a public to create the kind of movement that can force our elected officials and can force people like Barack Obama to do the bidding of the general public, as well as that of military contractors, etc. So it's a challenge to us as well for a job that the American public has not yet done, but clearly needs to.
Yeah, I agree with everything that Jav said. I also want to say, too, that given that, I think this award also recognizes, especially since the folks on the committee said they hadn't decided on the award until Monday, it also really is saying that it's to give Obama some courage to face down the generals, I think, in a sense, too. Because it's also, I think, an acknowledgement that he didn't immediately turn around and say, oh, General McChrystal, you want more troops for Afghanistan? Okay, how many? Should we send you 60,000? Should we send you 100,000? Should we send you 40,000? Etc. He's saying Obama's taken the courage to dig in his heels and say, we need to take the time to look at this. That in itself is an encouragement, I think, even to me, as well as to Europe. You know, they're saying, whoa, if it had been George Bush, it wouldn't be a matter of do we need to send more troops? It'd be a matter of how many. So I think they're, the Nobel Prize Committee said who and, we looked at the atmosphere of international relations in the past year. Things have gotten so much better. We're so much more hopeful. And the person responsible for that is Barack Obama. Yeah. And so I find that very interesting, too.
And on a similar thing, you have Congress and congressional Democrats in particular pushing very hard for additional sanctions on Iran. And the Obama administration has actually been dragging its heels and opposing that, saying that we're trying to start a diplomatic process here and that would tie our
hands.
Let's
at least get that started.
And
yeah.
that also is encouragement from the international community for Obama and to try and slow down the hawks of both parties. And including our Secretary of State in the United States.
Mm-hmm. All right. And finally, quickly, from the Fences Make Good Neighbors Department, Congress killing.
Oh, yes. Congress killed an appropriations amendment this week that would have added an additional 300 miles of border fence around Texas, thus setting off spontaneous demonstrations all across Mexico from people who wanted protection against encroaching Texans. But really, given that the border fence is such a ludicrous and ludicrously ineffective policy, even for its intended goals, it's strictly a symbolic and very expensive technology that's also good news.
All right. Moving on to international and Afghanistan.
Yeah, another wrinkle in the voter fraud in the presidential election in Afghanistan. The Washington Post this week got hold of a spreadsheet from the UN Commission in Afghanistan, and it showed that the UN Commissioner in Afghanistan has been caught keeping secrets from the press about the exact extent of the fraud in the voters' election, in the presidential election there. It turns out that in some provinces, the official vote count exceeded the estimated number of eligible voters by 100,000 or more, especially in the provinces where Karzai was popular. For example, in South Helmand province, the official count was 134,804 votes, 83% of which were for Karzai. The UN estimated that the actual voter turnout in that province was between 5,000 people and 38,000 people. That is an amazing number. In Paktika province, it's the same. The official Afghan government count said about 212,000 voters, 91% of whom voted for Karzai. The UN estimate was maybe 35,000 people went to the polls. So it's just astonishing the amount of fraud in these provinces, and that the UN commissioner was withholding that information. He didn't want to make it public. He didn't want the international community to know. And it's a scandal, essentially. I find it interesting that the New York Times has found similar problems with voter fraud by looking at the data, and now the Washington Post as well. And this is in the nation where our president and our Secretary of State sat down and said, we support Hamid Karzai. He is the next president, regardless of the actual outcome of the election. That in itself should be a scandal as well.
Yeah, and the fact that they gave the election a clean bill of health literally hours after the polls closed without even waiting to find out whether any of these allegations were true or not. And as it turns out, almost all of them were, and even worse.
Yeah, and it's almost certainly he has not won the election by fair means.
All right. Also, I saw this week where the U.S., the Pentagon changed the contracts for U.S. media when they embed with troops, that they can no longer show images of U.S. troops being killed.
Or the bodies of dead or wounded soldiers.
Right. So
wasn't that an issue that people were really upset about when Bush, you couldn't show returning coffins and that kind of thing?
Apparently so. All right.
God, that's a change I can believe in.
Moving on, events.
Yeah, this is a queer weekend. The national march happening in Washington, D.C. this weekend for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queers. I think the PC term now is differently lusted. there will be events going on in Seattle as well in conjunction with that. Today from 9 to 5, there will be workshops all day on events of interest to the queer community at Pickett Hall at Seattle University. Check that out. And then tomorrow at 2 o'clock, a march and rally that will be held I believe, downtown Seattle. I actually didn't write down the location, but oops. But you can go online and find that out, I'm sure.
All right. And then finally, Mad City Chickens.
Oh, it should actually be listed on the state calendar. So you can check eatthestate.org and it'll be there.
All right. Also, Mad City Chickens. We had done an interview with the producers of that a couple months back. It's going to be showing tonight at the Queen Anne Movie Guild, 7 p.m. Queen Anne United Methodist Church on 1606 Fifth Avenue. So learn how you can raise your own chickens in the backyard. Talking as we do every week with John Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State is found wherever you find free publications or the differently listed. bookstores, cafes, King County Library System, pretty much wherever you look. This coming issue that'll be active this coming week, we'll have our election endorsements, and we'll be talking about that in the next couple of weeks as well as we get close to the primary, and the ballots should be arriving in about a week or so. So we'll be talking about that. If you have comments, questions, feedback, tips, any kind of information for us, or want to volunteer, or want to donate for that matter, we could always use our donations as well because it's a volunteer community-supported publication. Go to our website. It's www.eatthestate.org or email us at info@eatthestate.org.